Welcome to Your Infinite Health. Are you getting older?
Are you feeling it?
How would you like to do that in reverse?
We're your host,
Dr. Tripp
and Lene.
We've run an integrative medicine practice for 13 years.
Together, we have 60 years of combined experience helping clients.
We've helped tens of thousands achieve success in health and live longer, happier lives.
In this show, we'll cover peer-reviewed and evidence-based integrative approaches to creating the health you've always wanted.
We also share professional experience we see in the field every day.
So if you're ready to feel, look, and live your best life, you're in the right place.
Welcome to Your Infinite Health Podcast.
I'm hilarious.
Sometimes. Sometimes you are, and sometimes not so much. So, did you know that my grandmother was 80% Irish? People called her Iris.
Oh, really? Iris?
Because she was 80% Irish, so they called her Iris. Do you get it?
Uh-huh.
It's a joke.
Why is that a joke?
Okay, clearly it's a really bad joke, because 80% of the word Irish is Iris. Okay, that was a fail.
Fail.
My little dad joke calendar has let me down here. In other news, on St. Patrick's Day, I'm always the life of the patty. Party? No.
Yeah.
No. Losing it. Okay.
Why aren't you wearing green today?
Well, because today is technically, today's not St. Patrick's Day. And my listener can't see, but my nails are cat eye green. So I'm good.
Awesome.
Okay. I'm sorry, listener. Those jokes were like the worst. I will try to do better. And if you have any jokes, feel free to email them to me at info@yourinfinitehealth.com. What else is going on with you this week? So, listener, I left Tripp at home this morning because he was still sleeping and I had to get Huck to carpool. And so I just left him there. So he's actually on the video here with me and our guest in a bit that we will be having. Anything exciting went on this week because you were in Lake Charles?
I had I guess one of my patients that has just started coming and been coming for about 6 weeks now is having an extraordinary response. I guess she's doing really well with the optimization process, and she drug her husband in with her because she's doing so well. And he was seeing a practitioner that was
a nurse practitioner, not an MD. Go ahead.
Thank you for being so precise, dear. So a practitioner that, you know, is doing fad medicine and basically did not know how to follow even simple testosterone dosing. So got him in and started him this week too. But she is doing so well and is so enthusiastic and has started reaping the benefits of the optimization program, and did the epigenetic clock test so that we can get her true biological age. And so that's always a pleasure to see when people are doing so well and they understand that they can.
What'd she come in to see you for initially? Like, what brought her in?
I think hormone balancing. She's menopausal, just a year or so out of menopause, and was feeling very fatigued all the time, and had gained a significant amount of weight, and was not thriving any longer. And this is a vibrant woman, as I can tell, that really loves life and wants to do a lot of things, and that was not happening any longer for her. So she came in, and I think she also had attempted to go to this other practitioner and
nurse practitioner, not an MD.
There are a lot of MD.
I know, you're so nice. I'm really just
nice. Yeah. There are a lot of the physicians that do the same thing. They, you know, think a shot of, you know, or a pill of hormone is the be all end all, because they just don't know the information out there. I know this is critical, but at the same time, you know, you're not going to investigate and look at the the fine points of it and maybe send it to somebody who's focused on it and enjoys doing it.
Right. Well, that's cool because she hadn't even been, she's only been with you, what, 4 weeks?
6 weeks.
Right.
6 weeks.
6 weeks. Oh, that's very cool. Cool stuff. Okay, well, I want to get to the guest who is coming to us from Norway. And he said he had listened to our podcast. So that's cool. Touching lives over there in Norway. Hello, Norway. I'd love to come see you. So let me get to him. So his name is Dr. Torquil Faro. He was trying to get me off the hook on how to pronounce that. He's a general practitioner and emergency physician, documentary filmmaker, author, and photographer. In 1996, he was one of the first Norwegian medics to work for Doctors Without Borders when he worked in war-torn Angola. Over a 25-year career as a freelance doctor, he has worked all over Norway, has had tens of thousands of consultations, and gained a unique picture of the diseases that plague that population. He has learned that the cause is most often found in the stresses that our lifestyle places on our bodies. He is also an award-winning photographer, author of The Camera Cure. That's what's in parentheses because I can't pronounce the other word. The Camera Cure, and has made documentaries about his pilgrimages to Nidaro and Santiago de Compostela. An inveterate traveler, he has made his way by bicycle, motorbike, kayak, boat, and car through over 80 countries and speaks 8 languages. Oh my goodness. He lives in Oslo with his wife and 2 children. Welcome, Dr. Torquil. Dr. Torquil, thank you so much for joining us. Well, I guess it's my morning. You said it was your afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon from Norway. Yes, to Linné and Tripp.
Welcome, welcome.
Nice to be talking to you.
That's awesome. Really excited to meet you and learn about the great messaging that you are spreading, the awareness about heart rate variability and stress and mindset on stress, this idea that there's good and bad stress. I'd like to get into that. And your book, The Pulse Cure. So definitely want to talk about all those things. But before we go there, I was hoping you could tell our listeners like a little origin story and how you even got interested in becoming a doctor. And then from there, what inspired you to really dig into this heart rate variability messaging?
Yeah. To try to make a long story short. Yeah, I was studying medicine really to live a free life, to be able to work around the world, to work when I wanted to and travel when I wanted to. So that was actually my main inspiration. And then I did that. You know, I've been working like a locum doctor. I'm not sure what you call it. Working on and
yeah,
off.
We're familiar.
Yeah, working all over Norway. So I've been seeing across the 25 years I've been working as a doctor, I've been seeing like 50,000 different patients, which is like 1% of Norway's population. And I've been curious, how do people live? What makes them healthy? What makes them sick? And then, so it's been like an adventure, I would say. And then through the last years, or 10 years ago, my father died and he was 73. And then I started looking at myself in the mirror and I saw that, okay, I'm 40 pounds overweight. I don't train. I use some tobacco sometimes. I drink alcohol more or less every day to wind down, to de-stress, or so I thought. I was doing basically everything wrong. So everything that I'm talking about in the Pulse Cure, I've done really, really, really wrong, despite being a doctor. As my father died, I started looking for because I didn't want to die at 73. I had too many things to do, too much life to be lived. And I started orienting myself towards, okay, what can I do? How can I take charge of my own health and live longer and better? And then I saw that since I studied medicine like then 15 years earlier, there have been a lot of development. We know so much more now about what keeps us healthy. And I've been listening to your podcast, so I know that you know too. So, but what I found out then on my health journey was that we can actually monitor our stress balance through heart rate variability and all the new variables that are kind of exploding right now with Oura Rings and Garmin watches and all the other smartwatches and Whoop bands and lots of different devices that that are able to tell us the speed of our autonomic nervous system. And that, of course, makes it so much easier to regulate it and to take charge of our own health. So that was a short, trying to make a short intro.
That was very succinct. So you're saying, so heart rate, so a person can ascertain their level of stress by looking at their heart rate variability?
Yeah.
Is that that's the accurate indicator?
Yeah, I find it very accurate, yes. So particularly the Garmin watches that make it possible to monitor the stress level as we speak. You know, I can look at my watch here and see that my stress level now is 47, which is quite good. You know, it goes from like 0 to 100. And I took a cold shower before just some minutes ago. So that's why it could be higher if I didn't take the cold shower. For example, if I had a big meal before this with some chili in it, the stress level would be high. So this is a way that you actually have kind of a speedometer on your wrist, you know, and you're able to identify hidden sources of stress. Because what I found out the last years is that a lot of the stressors are hidden. We wouldn't necessarily think of it as stress, you know, that ultra processed food, poor sleep, you know, the menstrual cycle, the week before menstruation, and so on. Altitude is a big factor. So there's a lot of things that we wouldn't necessarily think about the stress, but that are draining us of resources without our knowledge until we get this speedometer and are able to adjust our load, so to speak. Yeah.
So what... And that's what the Pulse Cure is about. Like, what inspired that? Is it the observations that you had as you were being a doctor and you saw what people are doing to themselves, mostly probably out of habit and ignorance, really? Is that what inspired you to write the Pulse Cure?
Yeah, there's maybe two things. Firstly, I saw that most of the people that comes to my office have diseases that are lifestyle related based on inflammation of some kind. And you probably know too that they didn't have to be sick if they lived in another way, nutrition-wise and exercise and sleep and all this. They wouldn't have these diseases. And so that was kind of frustrating to know that you don't have to be sick. But the reason why I started monitoring my heart rate variability was just for myself. So I was just curious, how can I regulate my own system? And then my publisher, Norway's biggest publisher, became aware of that I was doing it and just asked me, because I've been writing for them earlier, is this a book for us? And I thought, okay, yeah. This is kind of weird, but because I was looked upon as a very weird person, you know, checking my pulse and using these devices. You know, I have one here, you know, and I have one here, the Oura Ring and the Whoop band, you know. So
tell the listener what you have on your chest.
On my chest, I have the First Beat device. So it's an ECG-based device. And First Beat is the company, the Finnish company, that makes the algorithms for Garmin's body battery system. So that Garmin is way ahead of all the other manufacturers. It's not their watches in itself, but that they have bought the algorithms and analysis from First Beat. So that's the trick.
So how many devices are you wearing?
I'm actually wearing five. I have a CGM as well. I have a blood glucose monitor. And that has also been useful, particularly the last days. I find myself sometimes waking up at night. And then when I check the CGM, I have just had a hypoglycemic episode. For some reason, I'm not diabetic. So I found that several nights that when I wake up feel a bit disturbed, it's because of probably a adrenaline cortisol reaction to a low blood sugar.
Or a bad dream.
And then the question is it, do I have a low blood sugar because of the bad dream? Or do I have a bad dream because of the low blood sugar? You know, because I started Googling it, and then I saw that hypoglycemia and nightmares is common among diabetics, you know.
Oh, wow.
So So, but I'm just curious, and I've seen so much use. It's been so much useful information from this CGM, I think, about what food will trigger the blood sugar and so on.
So, will you wear those things all? Like, you wear those things 24/7? You're almost bionic at this point.
Yeah, the CGM, yeah, like a robot. Yeah, the CGM I wear for a couple of weeks from time to time. Yeah, not all the time. So it's probably 3 or 4 months since I did this the last time. But the watches and the Oura Ring and the Whoop band I wear continuously. So
do you advise and put these on all of your patients also?
I don't advise the patient so much. If I see that the patient has these devices, I ask if can I have a look at it or if you want to, and then often I can see things about their stress balance that they wouldn't know. And there are so many diseases of these modern diseases with brain fog and fatigue and so on that we have no lab tests. We cannot see it until we see the results on the Garmin watches or Oura rings, or there we can see that it's a low HRV, which is a sign of a heavy load on this person.
So at the same time, I guess, you know, but if you had that information on and the patient population was sophisticated enough to say, I want this type of information, I want to know, you know, what's being created in my body, what levels of inflammation, what potential adversarial effects are taking effect, are having impact on my physiology. These would be incredible tools for virtually everybody to know. Obviously, you know, continuous glucose monitoring, you have to change the little thing every now and then, but the other ones would seem to be a way to get our patients to an extraordinary level of health and longevity.
Absolutely. And in Norway, no, this book, my book has been on the bestseller list now for 62 weeks. It was the third most sold nonfiction book in Norway last year. And I'm being recognized. You know, I just went into a sauna and a cold plunge today, and I'm kind of recognized everywhere. So because it has caught on so much that they use the watches, they have the PulseCure as a guide to how to monitor the system and what to do to get better HRV and to get the stress balance in order. So so absolutely, it's a huge wave kind of to be able to take charge of your health in this way. Yeah.
Yeah, so heart rate variability, maybe heart rate variability, the data on heart rate variability, that started back in like the, well, really back in, I think, the 70s and 80s, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then they had the ECG, you know, the big equipment, you know, expensive. You had to go to some place to have it measured for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. And so there's so much research on the importance of HRV. So if I Google virtually any condition or any disease and the heart rate variability, I will find lots of research on this. So, and lately also where they have used the smartwatches and so on to as an instrument for it. So it is well known that HRV is a good measure of the state of the autonomic nervous system, but it also seems to be a number for the general state of your health, like the immune system and so on. If the HRV is high, it's a sign that your immune system is better. I think it's more than just the autonomic nervous system. And of course, HRV, maybe some people don't know about HRV. The thing is that if you're in the parasympathetic mode, then when you're breathing in, your pulse rate goes up because there's more oxygen in the lungs. And if you breathe out and there's less oxygen in the lungs, the heart slows down just a little bit, just measured in milliseconds, but enough that these devices can pick it up. And if you're in a stress state, then regardless of your breath, the heart will beat at a very steady pace. And this is how the watches can tell whether you're in the parasympathetic mode or in the sympathetic mode and to which degree. Yeah. Probably the most common question I get, if it's stressful in itself to monitor it, and usually it's not. for most people that are able to regulate it and can identify what to do. But some people will be stressed because they see that it's very stressful. So then that can be a problem for them. But it's a orientation of reality, you know, that they find out, okay, this is your state. And usually these people have trouble. It's very rare that they can tell that I'm free of diseases, I'm living a perfect life, you know, that they have trouble, the ones that can see this. And then I think that, okay, that it's better to find out how can you deal with this in a good way and not just be stressed by it and put the watch away, because you will not get better. It will not help you. You will continue to have an overloaded physiology and get problems and diseases. Yeah.
So we could actually find out, like for myself in this moment, and taking my sip of coffee, I could probably document some reduction in my heart rate variability and assess whether or not it was serving me to have my cup of coffee.
And the good thing about coffee is that's actually good for you. So according to Whoop, you know, the Whoop band, they will take in the information from their users, and then they can tell that the caffeine and coffee is good for you, actually. So that's excellent, because a lot of the other things, you know, are of course, like alcohol is not really healthy. I used to think that it was healthy, that I could drink alcohol in the evening, you know, and to wind down, you know, but the stress, it comes at night after you have gone to bed. You can see on the measurements that when you wake up in the morning and feel kind of groggy, then you can see on your watch or on your iPhone or Android, you can see the load that has been stressing your system at night.
Excellent. So and there's, like you said, there's so much data out there on heart rate variability that, you know, you can actually, if you can integrate this into your lifestyle, you're really capable of maybe having significant impact. Because I know when I was doing some research when Lene and I wrote our book, I just did a Google search on stress and cancer, for example, and I think I came up with almost 2 million scholarly based articles on stress and its relation to cancer. It was amazing. So there's so much data there that this could help. I think help people navigate. So is your book kind of instructional? I beg ignorance here, but
it's kind of instructional. It mainly tells you, okay, regarding sleep, what to do, what would be the consequences, how to improve your sleep, and the same with nutrition, exercise, alcohol, finding rest, and menstruation, and different topics. It takes on one by one of these topics to improve your overall health. And as you said, the stress and cancer is related. And also, if you Google cancer and different kinds of cancer and heart rate variability, you will find out that your HRV will predict whether you get cancer or not.
Oh, wow.
If you get it, it will predict the prognosis. If you get rid of the cancer, it will predict who gets a rebound or whatever you call it.
A reoccurrence.
So it's a recurrence, yeah. So for a lot of cancers, I can't say all cancers, but for a lot of cancers, you will find research on this connected to HRV.
Interesting. Being an oncologist, that would have been more interesting, as I know I'm doing integrative and regenerative medicine now. I think back in the day, I might have been able to use that a little bit more effectively.
So I've seen also that they can predict whether the cancer has spread to the lymph nodes in some kinds of diseases. I think it was cervical cancer, that before the operation, they could tell to some degree who the chances of finding lymph nodes metastatics. Yeah.
By looking at a heart rate variability?
It actually correlated with the presence of metastatic lymphadenopathy. Huh. Staging, staging.
Talk about good stress and bad stress, or the perception of good stress and bad stress.
Yeah, so a lot of it is about perception. So if you are fearful of the stress, then it, according to Kelly McGonigal, that has been studying this, has written a great book called The Upside of Stress. If you think that stress is good for you, that you can handle it, that you are in control, then it's good for you. You will live longer and be healthier. If you think that the same stress is bad for you and you are fearful about it and feel bad about it, then it will damage you, actually. And the theory is that if you think you're in the challenge mode, you think you can make it, then the blood vessels in the peripheral arteries will dilate and give more blood flow to the vital organs and the brain and so on. But if you are fearful and you think that you're not going to make it, you're in the threat condition, then the same vessels will contract and lead to less blood flow. And they think that it's because of the evolution, that the only situation that humans and our ancestors were in this situation of fear was that you are being hunted down or you're in a fight where you need to minimize the blood loss. This is why the vessels act like this. And then, of course, if you're in a stressful, fearful state over time with the chronic stress, that is what is causing all this this trouble. But the watches cannot tell the difference. So the watches or different devices will just react to the heart rate variability, and they will not know whether you are in love with the other person or if you are hating the other person. You know, it's you have to make that yourself evaluation.
So how does one learn to love the stress of traffic?
I think that would be hard. I think you would need to listen to a good podcast and think that, okay, I'm in traffic here, but I'm learning a lot. So I do that. I quite a lot. I drive for 1 hour to where I work and back, and I listen to so many podcasts. You know, I found out the other day at least I'm listening to 10 hours of podcasts every week, and that would be like 500 hours a year. You know, it's like 15 work weeks, you know, just listening to podcasts. So and if you listen to the best podcasts about health, you will learn more from those hours than most doctors. No, that is at least the situation in Norway. I'm not sure how it is in the States, but in my opinion, 80% of the doctors, they don't know what you know that I hear that you're talking about. I'm not sure if it's like it's in the States or if you're further ahead.
Well, no, we are so, so backwards here. And, you know, it goes back to medical education, and then it goes into the reimbursement of insurance and, you know, that kind of problem. So, but I'm starting to notice more and more younger physicians like deviate from what they were being taught in medical school and looking for more natural approaches and
conventional reactive medicine.
And I'm also seeing a curve in people beginning to understand that traditional approach, reactive medicine, isn't serving them. And so they are also starting to seek for more natural approaches and taking an ownership in their health. So it is encouraging to see that both sides are like moving in this ownership, independent, natural healing kind of direction. So I think we're going that way, but I think a lot of people would think we were going that way since the 70s, you know, because you had Dr. Wheel and some of those guys in the 70s, but it, you know, people are slow, I guess.
Yeah, but now also the information is so much easier to get, you know, from the podcast, from the YouTube, from Instagram, from everywhere, that you can easily get this information. And as everybody is saying more or less the same, I mean, if you listen to 100 health podcasts, you know, it's the same message all over, with sleep, nutrition, exercise, all of these things that seems so important.
Well, I mean, it's really encouraging. Yeah, because those are things people can control, right? They are in control of what they eat. They are in control of whether or not they exercise. They are in control of their perspective on life. Those are things they can control and don't need a health insurance or a pill to fix. So I find the approach is way more empowering.
Although I find that they do, that people, the general population still has that paradigm in their mind. It's, if I have some issue, I get a pill and take care of it.
Yeah. So there's a doctor's responsibility. So there's, and that's the old way, Peter Attia calls it medicine 2.0, to wait until you are sick and then get medicines that are tested out on everyone that will just find an average, result. But now he calls medicine 3.0. That's the new medicine, that is the preventative medicine, the individualized medicine, what is working for you and not necessarily everybody else. And this is also the advantage of these watches, that it will tell you how you are reacting to a certain thing.
The good stress.
That is very different. People react differently to alcohol, differently to foods, differently to exercise. So you can't just, if you have a low VO2 max, a poor fitness level, the same half hour running will devastate some people for like a couple of weeks, while other people just shake it off in the shower. So these watches and devices will tell you how to train in a sustainable way that you can tolerate.
I'm out there getting a Garmin right now.
Garmin is the preferred? Is that the preferred tech?
Garmin is the preferred. It would be great if I see you have an Apple Watch were better. Or it's not really the watch. It's the algorithms. But if you have an Apple Watch, you can use an app called Athletic. That's a quite good one. You will get some of the visuals from the app Athletic, as you will see on the Garmin watches. It's the closest so far, but I've seen that the best thing to do is to put in your Apple Health that you have atrial fibrillation, because then it will measure better. If you tell your phone, you have to put it in your phone that you have atrial fibrillation. That makes it more accurate.
My Apple Watch dies, like it can't hold a charge for more than 8 hours, so I don't even really wear it. How's the Garmin hold up? Like you can
30 days.
What?
30 days. Yeah. So it's a whole different world. Because I've been testing out, of course, I've been testing out Fitbit, I've been testing out Polar, I've been testing out Apple Watch, and you have to charge it like every day.
Yeah. So, forget if you wear it in the day, forget trying to track your sleep, because then you have to charge it. So probably be looking into a Garmin as well.
But hopefully they will, because I see that Samsung now, their big competition, they are making something they call the Galaxy Ring. That is probably a copy of the Aura Ring. So there's, because there's so much, and that is the good thing, because now all the money has been in, after you have been sick, with medicines that you need for like 30 years. Now there's money in making people possible for people to take charge of their health through these devices. So it's a big industry that is very, very active, proactive now.
Yeah, very cool. Do you worry about, I think we had a guest on who was talking about, was it trip EMF radiation or something from devices? Do you remember what that was?
There would probably be some of it, but the most of it is they use light, to see your pulse. So light is good. But there's also the connection to the phone, but you can put it into a flight mode. So if you are worried about that, you could have the watch in flight mode the whole day. And then at a certain point during the day, you can connect them and they will transfer it, in 10 seconds and you can put it in flight mode again. And it's the same with the Aura Ring. So you can avoid it if
that's a concern.
I would, in the flood of EMF, I don't think this is the worst one. So
your Aura Ring's not going to kill you.
No.
Okay. Well, what's your favorite way to, your favorite method for reducing or lowering the stress levels?
That's actually cold. That's what I've found. And that is surprising. There's three... Three surprises that not eating is very relaxing, that fasting, intermittent fasting is very effective, lowers your heart rate, and also that cold is very effective. To have a cold shower, for example, I now usually all the time do 2 minutes of a cold showers to end the shower every day, more or less every day. And then also we get into the water here. Now it's like close to freezing temperatures, just 5 degrees above freezing.
And you're going and jumping. You're jumping in the lake. You're natural cold plunging, is
yeah, right? Yeah, out in the sea. Yeah, natural cold plunging, and that really puts down the heart rate and dampens inflammation.
Really, that seems so counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, I know. So I used to be also horrible also on this. I used to not go swimming until it was really, really Mediterranean or Caribbean temperatures. So, but it seems that the cold temperatures or for the circulation and system, then to expose yourself to different temperatures is very, very healthy, you know, and improves brown fat, you know, with mitochondria and so on. So it's very healthy. So I think one of the problems is that we have gone too far away from nature. So we have gone too far away from what we are developed to become. So we are developed to exist between hot and cold temperatures. Now we are too comfortable, always using surrounding ourselves in a comfortable temperature. So we are not challenging our systems. We are not moving enough. We are eating food that we're not made to eat, you know, with ultra processed food. You're sleeping too little. And if you are fighting our biology, we tend to lose some of that. So
that's a stress.
Yeah, it will become a stress on the system. Our, you know, the circadian rhythm, you know, to be awake at the times, you know, shift work, you know, at working at night. You know, I've been working so many nights as a doctor. And, you know, I knew it was uncomfortable. It was horrible at times, you know, to work at 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning. But that it was dangerous, we didn't know. Now we know that it can provoke cancer and then this more or less as dangerous as smoking to work, shift work. Yeah, yeah. Because the cells are not primed to work at that hour. And the cells that are primed to do the restoration work, you know, it will not be allowed to do their work. The circadian code, in the pulse cure, in all the subjects, if there's I recommend different books. So for example, if shift work is interesting and circadian rhythm, then I recommend the circadian code, and on sleep, the book, Why We Sleep with Matthew Walker. So I try to, on each subject, to lead the reader further on if this subject is good, because I try... In the book, I try to reduce, to make as little information as possible that is needed. And if you want more, then I will point the way to...
So you're not unnecessarily wordy. Is that what you're saying?
I use a lot of words. I try to use as little words as necessary. I'm making a promise in the book that I promise to do that. You know, I have written it down. You know, you can hold me to it, you know, if I use too many...
Nice. Well, what is one thing that you would like the listener to know?
I would like the listener to know that the stressful life that most people live now is having a consequence in your health. And you can get control of it. And with this new technology, it's a lot easier to do that. I think that would be the new message, you know, because this is the pulse cure is actually still the world's first, to my knowledge and my publishers, English, British and American publishers' knowledge, the first guidebook to how to use these wearables. It's a very new thing. There are lots of podcasts, you know, Whoop podcast is a very good podcast. So there are a lot of podcasts talking about it, but in the book form, I haven't found one. Because I wanted to find them, because I wanted to read to use as a resource for my book, but there was none.
You're the leader in that area.
Seems so.
So where can our listeners find out more about you and get a copy of The Pulse Cure?
The Pulse Cure will be released in the US in mid-May in a paperback, but it's already available as an ebook and as an audiobook on any Amazon or whatever. It's a kind of a normal publisher. And I also have on the internet, I have the thepulsecure.com, which is a social network where you can ask questions and you can watch webinars, and we have workshops, and we have a blog, and different activities that can take you further from just what you can read in the book. Then I'm also on Instagram on the Pulse Doctor. So it's quite new because I have a large Norwegian Instagram, but so this is quite new, the Pulse Doctor. So I found my name is probably too difficult to handle in English, so the Pulse Doctor would be easier to remember.
Well, listener, we'll have the links available for you so you can find him easily. Thank you so much for your time and all the information. I learned a lot. Tripp, would you got anything?
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful resource. You know, I highly encourage all our listeners to delve further into this, because this is something that is critical. It's a critical knowledge that is necessary. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah, thank you for coming on your show. And I know from, I've listened to at least 5-6 of your podcasts. So I know that you're talking about just the same things that I do. So
yeah, well, awesome. Well, thank you for being a listener, and thank you for being a guest. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Particularly the podcast with, was it Bartucci or something? Bartucci, yeah.
Bartucci.
On stress. Yeah, that was really, really nice one. I can recommend listening to that. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, listener, I hope you found this educational, informational, somewhat entertaining. And until next time.
Thanks for subscribing to Your Infinite Health. I'm Dr. Tripp.
And I'm Lynnae. Until next time, feel it, look it, and live it.